Hello, Billy Patterson here. Nearly 30 years ago on my Castaway programs, I talked with local people about their lives. Stay tuned and listen again to the following fascinating story. Good evening and welcome to another Castaway, which is a program where we take a well-known personality and find out a bit more about the person behind the personality. My name is Billy Patterson, and my guest this week is the venerable Archdeacon Thomas Doherty, pastor to his flock, filmmaker, entertainer, known all over the world and many other places besides as Father Tommy. Father Tommy, you're very welcome indeed to Castaway.
Thank you very much.
And now, where will we start? You've had such a varied life, it's very hard to know where to start. But how about we'll go back to the place of your birth in the year of 1903. Remelton, tell us about it. Not your birth, the town.
Well, I was born in the Bridge End, Remelton, 1903. And reared there until about I was 11 years of age before I left it. So at that time it was a thriving town and a very nice little town, and I'm glad to know that today it's becoming a heritage centre. But I went to school there and under the teaching of Master P.M. Ward from Killybegs and his wife and a Mrs. Strong and a lot of other boys, I paddled along the Lennon River and followed the salmon up to the pool. And followed the football team, of which Remelton had a very famous team at that time, a soccer team. And earlier on I was told that my father was one of the members of that team that won the North West Cup. There's a famous photograph of all the Norries and the Kellys and all these in the team. So I enjoyed the League of Shadows, the paddle steamer that came from Fawn and connected with Remelton, and that was the outlet for the people from the west who were going abroad. They always had to come to Remelton to get the paddle steamer and to get the connection of the train at Fawn to bring them to Derry. And that prevailed until later on. I'll tell you more about that later. But
can I go back?
Yes,
can I interject for a second?
Yeah.
Your father,
yeah.
What was his name?
John
Doherty. He made jaunting cars and traps and stuff like that. That was his business.
Yeah, well, there was a company called Hilfordy's in Bridge End, and they, for years, had been in the coach building business, and they got old, and some of them died off, and my father and his brother, two brothers, Hughie and Emmett. Now, my father was a coach painter, and Hughie was a carpenter, and Emmett was a smith.
They had it wrapped up between them, didn't they?
Yes, they had three or four other men to help them, but I've seen them producing jaunting cars and traps and wagonettes from scratch, so to speak.
Ah, right, I see. Your father was a coach painter, not a coach builder, I see. Right.
He was a painter, yeah.
Oh, I see.
And
you never thought of taking up the business then, did you, Father?
Well, as a matter of fact, I learned a lot from him when I became interested in art later on. He used to do a bit of dabbling at scenery painting for Father McLoone and so forth.
Oh,
I got
yes.
to know how to mix paint and so forth.
That was much later,
but
wasn't
it? That went on, you see, until the motor car arrived, say about 1910 or 11. A man called Charlie Mitchell was the first man to have a car in Remelton.
Yeah, I remember that. He used to hurtle around the streets 3 to 5 miles an hour.
Didn't yeah, we came up with them anyhow.
Well, there was a rather sad occurrence because of the advent of the motor car, didn't it?
Yeah.
It spelled the end of
well,
the...
that's the end of the jaunting car.
Yeah.
So they had to close down, but another feature about Remelton at that time was the railway coming from Strabane into Letterkenny, 1908. That meant that people then could go through Letterkenny on towards Dublin or wherever else. So as a trading centre, Remelton began to get closed down. I often saw when I was going to school carts, 38 or 40 carts drawn up one behind the other for the steamers, merchant ships that were at the quay, unloading coal and flour and all for Kelly's mills and Russell's mills.
Where did they come from, these steamers?
Well, from England mostly, I suppose, Scotland too, for coal. And I remember Spillers of Cardiff flour. I remember that distinctly because one of the lads who would be bathing with us had bathing togs, and written on the back was Spillers of Cardiff.
It
was a thriving town there.
It was, and then of course you mentioned the Lake of Shadows. Jim McDade was the skipper of ours. You were great fans of her when you were little lads running around the street. Jim McDade was a big hero, wasn't he?
He was.
Is he the same McDade now, the bottling people?
Well, they would be connected, I suppose. Bottling people, they were there at that time too.
But they
in the big way they are today.
Railway line killed off.
Oh, that started the downfall of Remelton.
Yeah.
And, of course, nothing came into Remelton. If anybody, like my father, losing his job, well, he had to clear out, and people like that couldn't restart. Mm. There was no method at all, not like the modern times where grants are given for other factories to start up. But Remelton was doomed.
Just started into a decline around that
time.
Yeah. And it had been thriving, hadn't it, for many, many years
prior? It was. Sure, you had harness makers, and you had, at one time, you had a tannery in Remelton. The remains of it is still there, and you had a few other...
Was there a distillery there at one time?
There was.
Is that big building just on the other side of the bridge? Was that the distillery?
No, that was the tan yard.
Oh, that was the tan yard, I see.
And then it was always famous for fishing, the pool is still there.
Indeed.
Sir Harry Stewart looked after that. And famous men used to come from London, from the House of Lords, to fish the pool.
Really?
And many a time we saw big 30-pounders being brought out of the pool.
Is that right?
So it was a lovely spot. Always was. I mean...
A thriving town.
At that time. And
I beg your pardon. I was going to say, you mentioned Sir Harry Stewart. The other families at the time, the sort of the big families, were Watts of Clara and people like that.
Mansfields and Oak Groves.
Yeah.
Kelly's, and not Kelly's, but Sweeney's. Watts of Clara. Sweeney's of Moya.
Yeah.
The Fullertons, of course.
Yeah.
And the Fullertons, and Johnny Fullerton of Fort Stewart, he used to produce thoroughbred and sell them in Newmarket.
You told me a story earlier about the little boy who went into the shop in Remelton looking for the pennyworth. Tell me that again.
It's worth telling anyway.
It is.
This man had his little shop, and the wee boy went in and he shouted, "I want a pennyworth of mixed sweets." And the man came out and he threw down two sweets and he says, "Caddy, you have more time than me, mix them yourself."
I like that.
Well,
now, Mr. McAdoo.
Oh, yes.
Tell me about him.
Well, I don't know much about him, but my father used to talk about... He was Vice President of America. He lived in the Mall. I don't know much about his
people. Born in Remelton.
Yes, for as
McAdoo. I must look that one up myself.
And
the British Navy used to come in.
Oh, well, the Navy came up as far as halfway between Remelton and Remelton. And...
Halfway between Rathmullen and
about
Whale Head.
Achnish.
Oh, okay,
the Whale Head.
Sure,
the Achnish Island. And as little boys on the, what you'd call the market square in the Melton, we used to stand, and the flash lights would come from the ships in Rathmullen, and sometimes pause, and we'd wave.
In
the light, you see.
Yeah.
And then pass over. Yeah. That was before the First World War.
But then they used to come in and play football, didn't they, with the lads?
They did. The sailors came up to Remelton and played football. And there used to be big crowds there for these matches. It was all soccer. We didn't know a thing about Gaelic football down there.
Really?
Patsy Gallagher, one of the greatest players that came out of Ireland. He played for Celtic for years and for Ireland.
Mm.
He was born in Remelton.
There's another lady, Father Tommy, or Archdeacon. I should really give you your proper title, but I'm kind of unused to saying it. Haven't known you for a long time. Father Tommy. There was a nurse, Blacknoush, from Remelton, wasn't there? She nursed.
Yes, her father was Mosey Black. He had a draper shop up near the, what you'd call the Five Lamps.
Mm.
And she was a nurse. Yeah, she nursed King George V. And she wrote a book afterwards, King's Nurse, Beggar's Nurse.
Really?
Yeah.
I've never seen it. Must see if I can get a copy of that.
Yeah.
Well, you'll excuse me hustling it, because we could talk for the whole Castaway simply about the days in Remilton. But we don't really have time. In fact, we'd better move on to Letterkenny, because with the demise of Remilton as a coach building and jaunting car place, the family moved to Letterkenny.
Moved to Letterkenny,
right.
But before I leave Remilton,
I better mention,
some people belong to me there. Seeing that you mentioned the nurse, Nurse Black, I have two cousins now living in Remilton, Molly and Kathleen, and they have just retired from nursing after years in Glasgow.
So they came back to Remilton. Career,
and they've come back now to settle down in Remilton.
Well, there you are
and
now.
They might write two books.
Why not?
Molly and Kathleen, yeah.
Right. Let me move on here, because we've got to get you into the priesthood here, because you were a bit of a scallywag running around Letterkenny. We don't have time
to tell. Well, I wasn't actually.
Oh, you were so.
I got very excited when I came to Letterkenny, because, you see, I'd never seen a train.
All right.
And I used to spend my time down at the station watching the train shunting. I don't know what they were doing, but if I got a penny, you were able to get from the station Letterkenny to the old town. With a penny.
Really?
That was a great thrill. And if you got tuppence, you could buy a bar of chocolate. We're leaving, you know, for the journey. Get off at the old town, then walk up the main street.
Walk home.
But it was a great thrill to get on the train, you know, after being used to boats on the.
That's right, you were.
Then.
Well, it's a good job that you're used to boats, because we're going to send you adrift, you know. We were going to send you off to a tropical island.
Yeah.
But a little more about the tropical island later.
Yeah.
To move on, you moved to Maynooth to study for the priesthood.
Yeah.
You were there 7 years, right?
Yeah. Went there in 1920. That was before the troubles ended.
In 1920?
Boy of 17. Actually, the first impression of Dublin was the train. I was stepping out of the train at Amiens Street Station, and the British military and the Black and Tans put us all up along the wall.
Did they?
There was an ambush further up in Amiens Street. We didn't know about this. So they put us up against the wall and in due course released us. And we came up Amiens Street and shots were heard, and we all rushed for shelter. I remember we went to a little cinema called The Masterpiece.
Mm.
I don't know what was on, but we were in shelter anyhow, and eventually we got out. That was my first impression of Dublin.
Oh, wow. Yeah, not a very nice impression to be left, but. Well, I'd better ask you what your first choice of record might be this evening, because we're going to give you 6 records to take to this island with you.
I see, yes.
And you will have a solar-powered record player, so.
Well, seeing. That I was entering Maynooth and all that for the priesthood. The Lord is my shepherd would be a very.
You like the Lord's my shepherd?
Shepherd,
you
yes.
shall have it, Father Tommy.
Very good, thanks.
Archdeacon Tommy Doherty, my guest this week on Castaway. We have been in Remilton, we have been in Letterkenny, and then off you went for 7 years in Maynooth. Now, after you were ordained, where was your first parish, your first church?
Well, seeing that there were too many priests for the four dioceses, I had to go to Scotland.
Why?
Well, you see, Scotland was short of men. and the Archbishop of Glasgow wrote to the bishop looking to see could he get the loan of a few priests.
Oh.
And Father Glacken and I were together ordained, and not only that, but Glasgow, Edinburgh too wanted a man. So it was a toss-up between Glasgow and Edinburgh. So I tossed and won Glasgow.
That double-headed penny that you still have, isn't it?
Father Glacken went to Edinburgh.
Right. You went to Paisley, in fact.
I was sent then to Paisley.
Yeah.
I was only there for 6 months. So I was a priest that was ill.
Mm.
So I was there for 6 months. And then I was sent from there to the place called the Shotts. The Shotts. Halfway between Glasgow and Edinburgh.
Right.
A mining district way up in the mountains.
This is what year? But 1921 or 22?
Oh, no, no. This would be 27.
Oh, 27. Sorry. Yes. Oh, yes. My edition's wrong.
Yeah. You forgot about Maynooth.
I did, of course.
7 years.
I did.
Anyway.
You're in the Shotts now.
We're in the Shotts and the Cool. And that was a tough time because there was terrific unemployment in England and Scotland. 2.5 millions.
Yeah.
So the people were very depressed and the mines were closing down. Finally, there was only one place open and the people were in a very bad way. And you must remember, talk about hard times now, at that time there was no such thing as a dole.
Mm.
People got no dole, but they got what's called a means test. And if there was £2.10 coming into the house, nobody else got anything. So we had to fall back on very desperate means to try to make a living.
Mm.
And it was very depressing in the mining districts because there's no hope at all.
It was that bad, eh?
It was that bad, and people, everybody would say there's only one cure for this, and that's a war.
Just kill off the men, was that it?
Right, there were.
You told me earlier that the men got 2 shillings... For digging a ton of coal. It took 3 tons of material to be dug to get 1 ton of coal.
Yeah.
They earned 2 shillings
to
per ton.
Cleaned.
That's 10p.
That's right. That's what I thought at that time, yeah.
That's awful, isn't it?
Yeah. Working under terrible conditions. I used to go down, and one night I was down in a pit, and after crawling for, a couple of 100 yards on my stomach, they told me I was underneath my old house.
Really?
And the roof was a foot and a half high.
Jeez.
2 men working in conditions like that.
Awful.
Scrolling out coal.
Yeah. Oh, there were awful conditions in Hurst. Yeah. I know that you did what you could there to help the people. You started little concerts and drama and all sorts of stuff, just to lift their hearts.
Got going on that sort of thing, just to lift them, yeah.
Was that your first experience of drama, or had you done it earlier?
I was a star in Maynooth, you know.
Oh, I didn't know you were a star.
Did you not?
No,
absolutely.
Do you want to talk about that?
That's where I made all the money. First year in Maynooth, they put me into a play, a comic part.
Yes.
So I never got off the stage after that.
Oh, I see. A star is born. Oh, I didn't know you were a big star.
As a matter of fact, we did Shakespeare and all, you know.
You did?
We did a Shakespearean play for 5 years in succession. Hamlet, Macbeth, no.
The lot.
As a matter of fact, I'll tell you a funny story about Macbeth. Frank Fay of the Abbey Theatre came down to coach us, you see, for about 3 months.
Mm.
And you had to be good with Frank Fay.
Mm.
So I was one of the witches. And he could never get us to walk around the cauldron the way we should do it. And he'd say, no. So this went on for a long time. And I was a bit of a soccer player, and one evening I put my knee out playing soccer. I didn't know what was wrong. They took me to the local infirmary in the college, and eventually, to cut matters short, I was able to get up and, with the aid of a stick, just move around. And then Fay called for a rehearsal, and I went down. And he called for the witches. So not knowing anything about me, he saw me coming out and going around the cauldron. And he turned to all the other students and he says, "Gentlemen, I've seen this done many and many a time by professionals, but not until this evening Has anyone done it as good as Doherty? I was only barely able to fit the toe of the ground. And then from that on, I was afraid I would get better.
Very good, I like it. Anyway, there you are now. I didn't know you were a big star in those days.
That gave me...
Well, I know that you moved on to Greenock, but maybe at this stage we'd better look for your second piece of music, Tommy.
Well, if you wouldn't mind, at that time in Scotland, Father Sidney McCune was coming into the limelight.
Right. And Father McCune was a friend of yours. Later stage,
that's,
I know.
That's right. As a matter of fact, I was thinking of him when I thought of Father Sidney McCune.
Yeah.
Because I think he had a better voice than Father McCune. But anyway, I was thinking of Bonnie Mary of Argyll, seeing that we're in Scotland, would that be?
You can have Bonnie Mary of Argyll, surely, sung by Father Sidney McCune.
I have heard the mavis singing his love song to the morn. I have seen the dewdrop clinging to the rose just newly born. But a sweeter song hath cheered me at the evening's gentle close, and I've seen an eye still brighter than the dewdrop on the rose. 'Twas thy voice, my gentle Mary, and thine artless winning smile that made this world uneeden. Bonnie Mary of Argyll.
Bonnie Mary of Argyll, very nicely sung by Father Sidney McCune. Now, you said Father McAloon had a better voice than that, eh? Or as good as that?
Well, as good as that, anyhow. Because I've been with him for 21 years.
You were. We'll come to Father McAloon in a minute. Yes. You moved on, didn't you, indeed, Father, to the town of Greenock.
Greenock, yeah.
Tell me about Greenock in those days.
Well, again, Greenock was totally different from the Shots, because we're down on the Clyde, as you know, and it was called famous for its sugar and ships. And again, there was decline there, too. Our church and parochial house was situated beside Scott's shipyard. And from my window, I could look into the yard and see a ship being built from the keel right up. I remember on one occasion, I was there for 5 years, I remember on one occasion the ship, they began to build it and finally they finished it. It was a cruiser, one of the ones that took part in the Battle of the River Plate.
Really?
Well, things were bad, and the shipyards closed down too, and there was nothing but depression. They used to, I think the figures, the population of Greenock at that time was about 64,000. And there were 16,000 unemployed.
Goodness gracious.
You
told me that the young people in Greenock, when they decided to get married, there was a reason for that.
There was a reason for that, because the government through the parish would give them 25 shillings a week if they were married.
Nothing as a single person.
Not a single person.
So they paid them 25 bob a week.
No dole or anything like that.
Nothing.
No. I knew a man beside me who went to the pictures every day at 2 o'clock. And he came home at 11. He got in for tuppence, and he told me that it kept his mind off food and he could sleep. Imagine that. And these were decent people that were working all their lives up until then. However, another thing. The unemployed. And it's so bad that when these couple were getting married, they couldn't lend the money to buy a ring. So I had to use the ring of my keys.
You married them with the ring on your key?
Yeah, there's no other ring.
They didn't have a ring?
They didn't have the money to buy one either. And later on, maybe some of them could rise to that when things got a bit better, but that's another story.
Heavens above. Just talking about the couple married, you once married a couple in Dunloe. Do you want to tell us about that?
Well, I was making a speech afterwards, and I said that everything went all right until the end, when we were in the sacristy writing out the papers, a bit of trouble started. And it all started because the groom gave me a shilling. So I took the bride over to the window and had a long look at her, and I gave 9 pence change.
Oh, aren't you the little devil?
Yeah.
Well, I know when you left Greenock, there's a lot of people were very, very sad to see you go. And the bands came out to greet you and everything. How long were you in Greenock?
I was there 5 years, yeah.
And you got to know the people.
I had a terrible time in Greenock. But again, I was really lucky in a way. The people, although they were downhearted and depressed and all that, we had a hall. And I made the best of it and kept them. Now, I started a thing called the Ladies' Social Union. That was for ladies on a Wednesday night who were depressed all week and in hard times and all that. And I thought if we got them together, and I did, I got over 500 together, and we met there on a Wednesday night, and they made their own fun, then their own dances and their own dramatic club and all that later on. And that went like a bomb. And not only that, the sweepstakes were legal at that time, the Irish sweepstakes. And I got them to give me, I think it was threepence a week, which they did, and I bought tickets for the Irish sweepstakes, and believe it or not, we won a prize.
Did you?
We got £100.
That's a lot of money, though, sir.
That was, until I looked at my book, and I had 253 names in the book.
Oh, dear.
Divide that into
£100. Yeah, not a lot. I have forgotten my calculator. We'd better move on, because we're going to head... Don't be sorry at all, sir. I could talk to you for hours. We're going to move to Dunloe, and just before we do, if you would give us the third record that you might take to this desert island with you.
Well, if we're going to Dunloe, what about The Shortcut to the Rosses?
Would you like to hear The Shortcut to the Rosses?
Yeah, sure, that would be
How about Bernadette Greevy doing it
Couldn't
for you?
Be better.
Great. Well, Father Tommy, we're back now in the year 1934, and you moved to the Dunloe Curacy, the district of Mena Cross.
Yeah, 4 miles west of Dunloe.
Right.
The church had been built about 4 years at that time, and it's still as good-looking today as it was then, and it was built for £1,500. But there was a lot of things to be done. The house was in a very bad state and so forth. And as I said before, one time or other, the toilet facilities were very crude. The loo had 3 walls and half a roof facing Broadway. Something desperate had to be done. The only way to get money at that time was to run concerts and dances, but mostly concerts. So that's where Father McLoon and I got together. I got together, and he had a terrific voice. He could keep a note in spellbound at the piano. And then I was able to come in and turn the music and tell an odd joke and so forth. As a matter of fact, on one occasion, we did a whole concert, but because of a mistake, none of the other artists turned up.
You did the whole thing.
We had to, yeah.
Well, around about that time, you got interested in films.
Yeah, well, that happened in Greenock. I bought the little machine, Greenock, a 9.5 millimeter machine, and I was able to take shots around the place, and then I brought it with me to Mena Cross.
Right.
And then I thought if I could take local scenes, of course it was black and white, and I thought I'd better concentrate on the people, which I did, and that could pack the hall in Dunloe, because it was an awful sensation. These people walked in. As a man said the following morning, I paid ninepence to see myself walking down the street. But even so, they'd come back again the following night.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's where then I got an idea, you see, with Father McLoone, that we can do a bit of a... like the Pattersons later on.
Yeah.
Sort of concert and films, you see.
Oh, I see.
So it worked all right, and
well, it seemed to. You also got, I know that you got, Kodak made you a battery machine specially.
Well, I wrote to Kodak in London and asked them, would they do that? And they wrote back saying they would, but I'd have to guarantee to take it. So I guaranteed to take it, and that cost me a fortune. £17.50.
£17.50.
Erigal.
Lot of money in those.
A terrible lot in those days.
Goodness. But it was worth your while, wasn't it?
Yeah, a 12-volt battery, I could get it up with Paddy the Cope, would charge it for nothing in those days, take it out to the islands, I showed pictures in Innisfree and Torrey Island.
People seeing themselves for the first time.
First time.
Yeah.
I had a very funny time in Innisfree. Innisfree Island lies at the mouth of the Dunloe Bay. Mm. And to get there from Mena Cross, you ascended a hill called Lost Salt. And I had an arrangement with the men on the mainland and in Innisfree as well, that I would stop the car, put on the lights, put off the lights, put on the lights. After about five of that, motored on, and everything was in order in the school. The screen was up. They knew I was coming.
Yes.
And went to Arranmore, went to Torrey Island. And this is a terrific sensation. You see, I could hire little pictures along with my own.
Mm.
Charlie Chaplin's, you know, Easy Street and all that.
Mm.
And the sensation of seeing these things in black and white. But I could give them a two-hour show. But one night in a three, I was running a picture called, Robinson Crusoe.
Mm-hmm. How terribly appropriate, right?
Yeah. That's why I booked it. And everything went well, and it was a good show. And the oldest man on the island came to me, Tim Goller was his name, and he congratulated me, and he thought it was terrific. Says I, Tim, wasn't it terrible to think of a man stuck on an island like that and nobody around? And he looked at me, and he had a bit of a stutter. He says, aye, but who took the pictures?
Not so slow.
Wasn't so slow, no.
Not so slow.
Yeah.
I know at the time... Oh, wait a minute, I'll tell you what. We'd better go into another piece of music.
Yeah.
Because we're really... I talk too much, and you talk too much. I don't know which it is.
Yeah.
But anyway... What about, I know at the time you did a little parody on a piece of Myolanthe. Now, I haven't got your parody, but I have the piece of Myolanthe, and you chose it.
Oh.
It's the little trio that you told me about. You want to hear it?
Yeah, please.
As soon as we may. Right.
If you go in, you're sure to win. Yours will be the charming maid. Be your lord. The ancient saw, they had never won their lady. Ever, never, never, they had never won their lady. Every journey has an end. When I grow worse, affairs will mend. God will know when day is nigh. Hustle your horse and don't say die. At such a price is not worth a maravay. Be so kind to bear in mind they are never. Brave deserve the fair.
That was a little bit of the trio from My Iolanthe, Soon As We May, and we'll not repeat the awful words that you wrote to it, I think, with Father McLoone. Mm. Now, I know, Father Tommy, that you were the Arranmore disaster in 1935. You had film of it the very next day, and you were involved in the Donegal Association, which was formed in Dublin to make money for the dependents and all the rest of it. And you took many, many films around that time. In fact, so much so that they were the subject of documentaries by RTE and ITV.
That's
the Spectrum
right, yeah.
programme. So, yeah. Famous character. And your films have become archive material.
Well, yeah. Some of the old stuff, yeah.
Really. As early as 10 o'clock now.
I might be able to video them now.
Video's the latest now.
I mean, I might be able to video the stuff that I took.
Oh, I see what you mean, yes. Yeah. I'm sure they will be able to do that, surely, and preserve it indefinitely.
But I don't want to be... make too much money, you know.
And you don't want to have to go back.
That's right.
Right. Now, where do we see what happens to you then? It's a pity I have to rush you along, but in 1940... Oh, no, wait a minute, while we're there, you were in the Chrysler area as well, and you said a lot of your time was spent in that area, wasn't it?
Well, that's later on.
Oh, is it? Shall we go to Convoy first?
Yeah.
All right, let's go to Convoy.
Convoy, well...
1941,
the war was just started, probably. A
couple of years.
The mills were going strong, as you know, nearly 400 working. There's no mills there now. But I was able to make a film of the mills, the Convoy mills, with the help of Shell.
And Jim Woods?
Well, then, of course, I have to mention Jim Woods, because I wouldn't have had pictures in the hall only for Jim Woods.
Yeah.
See, we had no electricity in Convoy at all.
None.
And Jim Woods had a terrific machine, and he had all the power and light out in Ballymonster. So I went out to Jim and told him my predicament.
Mm.
And believe it or not, that man gave me that whole machine for 9 months.
A generator?
Yeah. And I was able to run the big pictures in the hall. And
well, they're...
And Jim's still going strong, by the way.
Is he?
Oh, indeed he is. I want to thank him for that.
Well, of all the stories you could tell us about Convoy, I must ask you to tell me a couple about my favourite character, Paddy Rooney, because I've heard you talk about Paddy
before.
Well,
Paddy was a terrific character. He was the best humorist I've come across.
Mm.
Naturally fun, you know what I mean? Mm. He said things that were funny without... For instance, he was talking... I was telling him about the good flour that my sister had got, and she made a cake, and I thought it was very good. Well, he says, that may be, Father Ordy, but my wife's as good a baker as you'll get in this country, and she got the flour down... In the shop, the other evening, and I got a bit of the cake this morning, and honest to God, it would sink a duck. I mean, he said things like that.
He was a builder, wasn't he?
He was, and he built the new chapel there at the college.
Yeah, yeah.
And one of the best architects in Ireland said he never saw a better stone builder. Anyway...
You saw him building one day?
He was building one day, and I said, "Hey, Paddy, how did you learn this?" So he looked at me and he says, "Father Doherty, if it's in you, it'll come out. And if it's no in you, it'll not come out." And I said, "Well, you see, my father was a builder," he says. He was a stone builder. But I worked with him for a year, and then I went over to Scotland. And I got a job at the Central Station, and you know, it was a cakewalk. You see, you had the big blocks like this here, you see. And you put the mortar on top of the block. Then you got another block and you put it down edge to edge. You had nothing else to do then but lift your throat and knock off the wee snot that was cement. That's the sort of way of talk, you see.
And also the one, just before we go, about the daughter going to the dance.
Oh, I had three girls, and I was telling him, "I said, oh, you're getting on all right now, Paddy, and the three working in the mill, that's what you think," he says. "But sure, they spin it on a stick lip."
Stick lip.
Stick lip, he says. You know, he says, "Maisie was going out to a dance the other night. I just had a look at her before she went out. And honest to God, Father Doherty, she hadn't as much honour as would tighten the handle on a spade." I mean, that's the way he talked.
We better leave, Paddy Rooney, because we could be on all day. Yeah. Let's move on to your fifth record quickly. We'll play a wee bit of it for you.
Well, there was a crowd one time called the Pattersons. You never heard of them.
I heard of them. Right.
Well, couldn't the coroner increase, so wouldn't that be bad?
Well, I must say, it is when I saw that you had chosen one of our records, I was highly delighted and honoured that you were going to take us to the desert island because you introduced us in our very first stage performance.
We didn't talk about Dunfanaghy.
Not yet. We haven't time.
Well,
We'll cut the corn. You introduced us on our first concert and our last. Here's a wee bit of cut in the corn and crease.
Dear Danny, I'm taking the pen in me hand to tell you we're just out of sight of the land. In a Grand Allen liner, we're sailing in style, and we're sailing away from the Emerald Isle. Strange sort of sigh seems to come from us all as the waves hit the last bit of our Donegal. Ach, it's good to be you that is taking your tay where they're cutting the corn around Creasla the day.
A little bit of cutting the corn around Creasla from the Pattersons. Now, Father Tommy, I know that from 1954 to 65 you were in Donegal Town. You ran a cinema in the chapel. We haven't even time to talk about that. I'm going to have to bring you back for another Castaway. You were involved with Howard Temple and the golf course at Merva.
That's right, yeah.
From 65 to 89 you were in Dunfanaghy.
Yeah.
You're the Donegal Man of the Year. Friends with Barry Fitzgerald, Cyril Cusack, Liz Taylor, Richard Burton.
Known all over the world.
Known all over the world, as I said in my introduction, and many, many other places besides. You're a star of TV and radio and everything else. We just don't have time. Would you come back sometime and we'll talk about it again?
Well, I've got the expenses, you know.
You get the expenses. The fees, we. But before we leave, you're going to be stuck on a desert island. Now, we're going to give you... tell me now, of course, we haven't told anybody. You retired in 1989.
Yeah,
last year. And you're living in Letterkenny.
Gartlee. It's either Carnamagalore or Gartlee. But checks, if you're sending checks, Gartlee will get me on.
Who's looking after you there? Are you doing it yourself?
Oh, my sister Rose Coburn.
She's
looking after me. And
and by the look of you, she's doing a queer job.
She was... 4 years during the war in Letterkenny, you know, with her family.
Right.
Her husband, she went on a holiday and the husband couldn't get over to bring her back.
Because of the war?
So Tommy was ordained, it would be Dan McTeague's class, Tommy Coburn, you know.
Right.
And he was here a short time ago and one of the daughters was over here too. So Rose is happy enough, I think.
Good, yes. Rose is looking very well too. Now, you're on the desert island.
Yeah.
You've got the Bible. And I'm going to give you two other books to take with you.
Oh,
what would you choose?
War and Peace.
Get a chance to read it, eh? Yeah. It takes years to read, doesn't it?
Even so, yeah.
Yeah, okay, right. Yeah. And what would be your second choice?
Oh, well, another good hefty one. The American Civil War business. Gone with the Wind.
Oh, Gone with the Wind. Yeah. Margaret Mitchell. Yes, a great
book. That's right.
Marvelous book.
Take forever.
That'll
keep me going for a while.
That'll keep you going. Now, would you be any good with your hands? Could you make a shelter and make yourself food and make a raft, maybe?
If you had the stuff, you know.
You haven't much on this island now. We'll give you a machete and that's about it.
I don't know, but you have a forest or something.
Oh, plenty of palm trees and plenty of food and all that.
Yeah.
No bother.
No.
You could manage all right.
Yeah.
You would try to escape.
No. Anyway, you could run down to Quinsworth.
No Quinsworth in this desert island at all. No, absolutely not. Now, if you were allowed one luxury... Just one luxury.
One luxury?
Mm.
Food, isn't it?
No, you can have a luxury. Food you've plenty of.
A nice wee picture house with all the...
picture house. Well, that'll ring true, all right. Father Tommy.
Yes, too.
I know that there was a very nice tribute paid to you, just to finish off. Your last record, by the way, that you chose, we'll play it now in a moment. It's...
I hear you calling me.
I Hear You Calling Me by John McCormick. We'll have that in a moment, but just before we do, I want to thank you very much indeed for coming in.
Thank you very much.
I Hear You Calling Me.